Welcome to East Meets West, episode 139. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And joining us today, Josh Lawrence.
JL.
Who didn't have a mic last time, but he was in the background.
I just cried in the background.
Yeah,
Did you mention that you cried?
Yes.
We actually managed to swing over to one of the local karaoke bars, and we sang a tune and kept the mic.
Nice. Well done, Josh.
The police will never catch me.
Property is theft.
That's right.
Would you like to know what song
Josh is our token socialist on the show today.
Token?
Oh, goody.
Oh, so great. There's two of you. Lovely.
I'm as much of a socialist as John McCain.
That grin, I think, says everything.
No, I've never been a communist or a socialist. I've never also been a fascist or a libertarian or any other
ism.
I don't believe in isms. Uh-huh. I just believe in me.
Maybe those isms.
All right, John.
Tom.
Lennon.
So we were just talking about Christian Slater because we saw a guy in Lou Dobbs Tonight who looked like him.
Yes, and I just said how weird it is to look at him now. He's like, what, in his late 40s? Early 40s? Please be in your late 40s because I can't be that old.
You're freaking old, dude.
But
get out your cane.
But it's just, he looks weird. His head's bigger.
Do you like that show?
I've watched a little bits and pieces. I like the premise of the
show. I can never remember
the
name of the show.
The Something Life?
My Own Worst Enemy.
Yeah, My Own Worst Enemy.
It always takes me a little while.
But essentially, for those who don't know, the show is that Christian Slater plays a government agent, like an assassin. But in order to...
Partly assassin, yeah. He does. Assassin is one of his job duties.
To provide him a cover, he actually has to go through some sort of, I don't know, is it hypnosis or some sort of treatment where...
It's a chip, actually, that has been implanted in his brain, I think.
Science.
If I understand it correctly. And they can switch him back and forth between the real FBI agent or secret agent and the fake persona that they have implanted in his brain.
So, since I have only seen bits and pieces of the first episode, I didn't watch the second and third one.
Chip goes faulty. That's the premise of the whole show. Chip goes faulty, and they can't control anymore when he flips back and forth.
Is that family that he's with his family?
You mean his wife and daughter and kids? Yes.
So that's
because he was created 9 years ago, and he met her 8 years ago, and then they got married and had kids.
Okay. All right, I got it.
So
I'm just trying
to
make sure whether or not they also like those. That family is all plants there to
No. The way the plant stuff works is the double agents, when they are in their personas, who know nothing about the fact that they are personas, work in this sort of nondescript office situation where they go on business trips to Akron, and you don't really get a clear idea of what they do, but it's sort of insurance-y, generic business-y. And then when they go up the elevator... that's when they switch them. They switch them in the elevator on the way up to the upper floors, which is where the secret agency has its offices.
Nice.
And there's only one person in the front office who actually knows what's really going on.
It's kind of like in the Bourne Identity, or at least in the... I'm not sure if the books or the novels had the same premise, but all the actors and agents were like had covered. Like, for example, one of the assassins was a piano teacher, and then they gave him a code word, and it switched him on, and he went out.
Very similar.
So
that's also true of all of the presidential candidates this year.
That you can switch them on and off.
Yeah, you can switch them back and forth.
Are they secretly aliens from a different planet?
Probably.
Now, is his assassin persona aware of the other of his normal?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's not just an assassin, Josh.
Okay,
you're trying to pinhole him.
Oh, I know. I'd like to stereotype him.
You're trying to pinhole him.
Yes, pinhole him.
Like a
camera.
Butterfly.
I collect assassins.
Like pinhole makes more sense than pigeonhole, like less sense than pigeonhole. But anyway.
All right, whatever.
I digress.
Don't get too angry there. I know how you are with the mic in hand.
We are 2 days before the election of a brand new...
administration.
United States president.
Yes. Boop. Administration, because not just the president that gets the boot.
Well, we're electing a president, then the president picks his administration.
Right.
But we're not. We're electing a set of electors.
Yes.
Who will then submit.
You want to spend 5 minutes on your rant again?
Oh, you and the electoral college.
Kill the freaking electoral college now. Go see previous episodes for why, if you disagree.
All five.
Tom loves electoral college. He's going to have a T-shirt with a little.
No, I think it's. I have been modifying my view a bit since we talked about this last.
How
You won't kill them?
Well, I went back and there's a great site called presidentelect.org that collects all the electoral votes going all the way back to 1789.
Uh-huh.
And I did, I realized that, you know, they're supporters of the Electoral College and they have some history on there. And they point out that the original idea of the Electoral College was that you would vote for people in your state
uh-huh.
who you respected. And then they would decide who they thought should be president of the United States. The assumption being that they would probably pick someone from their region, not that there would be some national candidate. Then those electoral votes would be sent to the Congress. Congress would read out the votes, and then the top two vote getters, it was presumed, would never have enough to have a majority.
Mm-hmm.
But of those top two vote getters, then the Congress would select a winner.
That
was the way it was supposed to work. So it was sort of a way of having a parliamentary system
yep.
without having a parliament. So instead of having the Speaker of the House be the president, you got to have this more powerful executive, but it was still supposed to be picked essentially by the Congress after the people had nominated a few folks that they thought were qualified to be president. Now, when put that way, I think that makes sense. Fantastic. I think the idea of just voting for smart people, you know, I'd probably vote Lawrence Lessig as an elector because I respect him. Mm-hmm. I think he would make a good judgment. And it takes away the idea of the person who runs for president probably is not going to be as good of a president as someone who wouldn't want to be president. You know, that sort of, mm-hmm. I wouldn't mm-hmm. want to be a member of a club that would have me. So I actually, if there was a way to make that work, I'd be fine with it, but we've so perverted it at this point.
Well, I think
it's this winner take all, and you pledge the electors, and you're not voting for electors, you're just voting for a guy, and then there's this little dance of like, well, your vote is now turned into 21 electoral votes, and
no,
it's
just
ridiculous.
I think it really just needs to be removed at some point. Hopefully sometime in the near future. But I don't know. I mean, most of it, I mean, I actually do like the idea that people can elect directly the body, the person that they want.
Certainly, it has a lot of advantages to it, sure.
I'm not so fond of electing the party and then having the party elect. I'm not big on the party system. Yeah, I'm not big on the party system. You already know my opinion on the party system, but you also know that I'm not a big fan of, like, you know, the Democratic National Convention or the Republican National Convention. I think you should be able to pick from those people, right? I don't think you should get it whittled down for you before everyone gets the chance to say yay or nay.
Well, there's lots of candidates out there.
Wasn't that guy from Too Close to Comfort?
Charles Baldwin, the independent write-in Alaskan independence candidate. There's Robert Barr, Libertarian candidate.
Yep.
Cynthia McKinney, Green Party candidate. Ralph Nader, no party candidate. He's actually
the
Alaskan independence candidate.
Wait.
He's also an Alaskan independence
candidate. Wasn't he part of the Green Party?
Yeah, he was the nominee of the Green Party for a few years running.
Yeah.
But then after 2000, they decided they didn't want him to be their nominee anymore. And so then in 2004, he started running as an independent.
I see.
So now he's on the ballot in not quite all 50 states, and he's affiliated with whoever could get him on the ballot. So he's on the New Mexico Independent Party, the Ecology Party of Florida, the Natural Law Party, the Peace Party, the Populist Party, pretty much wherever.
Populist Party? That sounds kind of dangerous.
So Roger doesn't like the masses.
These are the candidates, at least, that VoteSmart calls the major candidates, the candidates that are on the most number of ballots.
Who are the minor candidates?
Well, there's no end of minor candidates.
Make a movie about all the minor candidates during this recent election, it'd be really, really, I think, eye-opening.
Because every state has a different slate of presidential candidates on the ballot. And those that I mentioned are for the... Well, we didn't mention Barack Obama and John McCain. They're on all 50 ballots. I believe Bob Barr is on 48 ballots.
Which states is he not?
There are two states that he didn't make it on, I think. He's a Libertarian candidate. And then I think Cynthia McKinney is on 40-plus. She didn't make it quite on all of them. Nader didn't make it on quite all of them. But they're on a majority of the ballots. Then you go into some people are only on one state's ballot, and you start getting the, you know, lots of independent, you get Republicans and Democrats apparently who are on ballots, but aren't actually, Josh is leaving. He can't stand this. Yeah, there's a ton of presidential candidates. Wow, this is insane.
You know, it'd be cool to kind of do a if I'm telling you, if you did a movie about just the non two candidates, everyone else.
You don't have enough. yeah, what's going on over there?
It's a little slapstick comedy.
Oh, he knocked over his drink. Okay, never mind, Josh. He'll be okay.
So, what is that website?
Presidentelect.org.
Well,
has the Electoral College results going back to 1789. The site I was on just before that was smartvoter.org.
So, just so people realize who aren't in the U.S., not only are we electing a new president, but for a lot of states or a lot of communities across the country, this is a time where you're also voting on ballot initiatives.
Right.
As well as any local incumbent or any local offices or seats.
Well, yeah. A third of the senators are up for re-election because we replace a third of the Senate every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the representatives are up for election. Every 2 years, every congressional House of Representatives representative is up for re-election. So you've got those national offices, and then you've got local state legislatures and governorships and like you said, propositions.
So yeah, and you know, at least in California, there's a number of very similar sounding initiatives, at least when it comes to things like alternative energy sources. There's like Prop 7 and what's the other, Prop 10? Or
yeah, well, in California has one of the more unusual, they're not the only ones to do it this way, but one of the more unusual systems where you can put amendments to the Constitution on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Almost any tax change involving the state has to go on the ballot. We have a lot of direct democracy of laws. Not every law, obviously, has to go on the ballot, but...
I mean, that was most most notable when the recall of Gray Davis, and where we got the governator.
Yeah,
and
the city of Greenville, Illinois, has a city initiative on the ballot, a referendum on whether to end the ban on liquor
Walmart
sales within the city limits.
So it's a
Greenville has been a dry town.
It's a town, but not the county's dry.
No, the county is wet.
Okay.
In fact, if you go to Greenville, there is a hotel, Best Western Hotel, that sits on the very border of the city limits. The hotel rooms are in the city, and then the restaurant is in the county so that the restaurant can serve beer and wine with dinner.
Nice.
And there has been a movement, finally, of the Chamber of Commerce to say this is restricting... the ability of business to grow. Restaurants have not moved in. There's been an area outside of town near the highway that ever since I was a little kid, there's been rumors about what was going to go there. One time they were going to put a Disneyland there. One time they were going to build a mall there.
Wait. So is it just a big tract of empty land?
Yeah, there has been a prison built on part of it, but a large part of it is still undeveloped.
So you're going to put a family amusement.
Well, what they're saying is the reason we keep having these people interested in it and falling out is that they can't get enough restaurants into any development unless they have the ability to serve beer and wine.
Hmm.
So they're trying to change that law. I think it's still only going to be in restaurants. I don't know that they would allow vodka sales in the grocery stores. Maybe they would allow beer and wine. I haven't actually read the proposition, but it's a pretty big deal in that town.
Wow.
Because it's been dry, well, my entire life. I'm not sure how long before that.
And you've been around since, you know, God knows when.
1970.
Oh, well, close enough.
1901.
God also knows when, but I have been around since 1970. I did a blog posting on the Subrilliant blog today.
Cool.
About the predictive markets.
Ah, yes.
Because
you're very big on it.
Stand the fact that CNN and MSNBC, well, forget MSNBC and Fox News. I have no use for them. But CBS, ABC, CNN,
No, all, CBS, NBC, ABC, or
the major networks. Okay. CNN. I mean, Fox regular fine. I'm talking about Fox News and MSNBC. They're so slanted one way and the other.
Yeah.
I kind of throw them out. But the major networks all talking about polls, and CNN's trying to do the CNN thing and try to, and walk the middle line, be objective. And so they have their poll of polls where they aggregate numbers together.
Say that again?
The poll of polls?
So essentially they're polling
a meta poll?
They basically just take all the polls and they
aggregate them?
Some sort of computation on that to come up with a more accurate poll. Trying to eliminate the...
But what if that's garbage in the first place?
Well, every poll is plus or minus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if poll's garbage, they're not going to use it, okay? I mean, you can question whether polls should exist at all. But let's say for the sake of argument that we accept the margin of error on a given poll. They're trying to take all of these respectable polls and combine them to reduce that margin of error because it's a larger sample rate. The problem is... polls are flawed at the base, in my opinion, because it's people saying,
"Have you ever been a poll taker?"
I've been a poll taker and a poll. I've been a poll administrator and a poll answerer.
He's been Polish.
No Polish jokes.
Oh, sorry.
I've done where you've actually had to get people and solicit people's opinion. And this is the weird thing because they always come back to you, especially if it's one of those sheets you hand out and they fill out on the sidewalk and they come back to you. They always come back to me with a question about the question.
Well, wait, what does this mean? When I was a poll taker, I was instructed very clearly to only repeat the question, that you could not give them any kind of guidance, which is understandable because you don't want to affect their answer. But at the same time, then they're always. I don't know.
I mean, it's the thing is, I don't think people appreciate the fact that polls can be deliberately skewed depending on the questions. And not, for example, say it's something as simple as whether or not there should be an increase in the sales tax for gasoline to fund, say, road improvements in the local community. The way you phrase it can totally switch people. Do you think the government should raise taxes on gasoline? He ended there. Or do you think having road improvements through the increase of sales tax on gasoline is a good thing? Those could bring out totally opposite answers.
Right.
I don't think that that's true of the presidential election. I mean, obviously there are ways to phrase those. That like, are you going to vote for socialist Barack Obama or patriotic John McCain is going to affect the answer one way or another, maybe. If you just say, who do you plan to vote for on election day? That question doesn't affect your answer, but your answer could still be like, oh, I'm voting John McCain. And then on election day, you get in there and go, you know, I'm sick of both these guys. I'm voting Bob Barr.
Well,
or you're embarrassed because you are attracted to one candidate or another, but you've always been for the other party.
Well,
and so you're going to still say, oh, I'm still voting for my party, but then maybe change your mind in the ballot.
But it's also things like where you're kind of embarrassed about who you would select. And the pollster would see it. And it's like, well, I don't want people to think I'm like that, so I'll vote for this way.
Right.
And the reason I say that is because I've done that personally, and it was something very innocuous, like, you know, who would you want, what celebrity or whatever you would like.
Oh, right, yeah.
But it's one of those things you consciously think about. It was, you know, like, well, you know, I could say that, but then I look like a douche, so I better put this person.
This is all a long way of leading up to predictive markets, which I'm a big fan of the Iowa as well as InTrade, although I prefer the Iowa market.
Because it's closer to
Illinois.
It's been
around longer. It's a little more rigorous. InTrade seems a little more volatile. But they both allow you to put money down on the results of the election.
Which and I think is genius because you know what? People care. If there's one thing people care above, you know, sex and all that, is their money.
And it's not that much money. It's not like you're making $1 million on this. So it's not out of hand where people are going to try to affect the election to win it. But you put a dollar or two down.
Never know.
And the idea is that when people answer a poll, they're going to answer with the effects of all these things. But when people put their money down in a predictive market, they're going to want to get their money back. So they're going to put what they think is the most accurate answer. And then you get the wisdom of the crowds because enough people participate in the market that it will cancel out the outliers and give you a fairly accurate result. I don't understand why none of the networks are picking up the predictive market when they're talking about what states are ahead and behind,
give
and
it
how
one
the
more
polls
election.
Are. I don't know. Maybe CNN is using the predictive markets in its poll of polls. I have not heard them reference it at all, though, so I don't think they are. But I did a little analysis going back to the last two elections. In the 2000 election, 2 days before the election, that's where we are when we're recording this podcast, 2 days before the election, Al Gore's vote share prediction, because there's two markets for the president. There's vote share, where you try to predict what share of the vote a candidate's going to get. And then there's winner take all, where you're just trying to predict who's going to win.
Yeah.
Al Gore had 49.6%, and George Bush had 49.4%. So 0.2% behind Al Gore 2 days before the election. The actual vote tally was Gore 48.4 and Bush 47.9.
Nice.
So it got it right. Just a couple percentage points ahead,
but that's just that's just statistical.
And then winner take all, Al Gore had 27.3%, George Bush had 74.9%. Josh is leaving again.
I'm so offended by you guys constantly.
So what you're saying is that
It got it right on who won the Electoral College as well.
Nice.
Even though we had that long, drawn-out process where everyone said, "Who knows what the outcome is this going to be?" Well, the predictive market had it 75% George Bush 2 days before the election.
Interesting.
Now, what these do is they say, if the vote were taken today, this is what the market thinks would happen.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot can happen in 2 days still. Not in this case, but a lot could happen. 2004, George Bush 51.7%, John Kerry 48%. Was the vote share prediction. It ended up being 50.7, not 51.7 for George Bush, and 48.3, not 48 for John Kerry. So even more accurate in 2004 on the vote share, two days before the election. Winner takes all was very close. The market wasn't quite sure. George Bush was 55.2% and John Kerry 45.3. So they weren't decisive.
It's a pretty good predictor.
They picked the right one. So here's where we are right now on the predictive market. John McCain, 47% of the vote. Barack Obama, 53.5% of the vote. And the winner take all, John McCain, 11.2%. Barack Obama, 88.3%.
Wow.
The market has very little doubt.
Yes.
Who is going to win this election?
But on the go back to the share portion. They're predicting that John McCain will get 48% of the
47, yeah,
of the electoral votes.
47% of the popular vote.
Popular vote.
This is the popular vote.
Got
correct.
It.
Which is why it was able in 2000 to say, yeah, we're predicting Al Gore will get more popular votes in the market, mm-hmm. but we're predicting George Bush is going to win the election.
Got it.
Because of the electoral college.
And the same is then for the winner take all. Is that everyone? There's 80%+ chance that, or they feel 80% of whoever's investing believe that Obama will come out on top and the remainder will be McCain.
In 2004, the market thought George Bush was going to get more popular votes, but it wasn't quite sure about the electoral votes because the winner-take-all was still very close. But they picked it right, 55%. Was it 55? 55.2% winner-take-all for George Bush. So they picked it right, but there was some uncertainty there, which, as I recall, that was sort of the way it was going into the election on that Tuesday. People were thinking Bush still had a lead, but they weren't sure. And in fact, for a while during that day, a lot of exit polls were indicating Kerry was winning.
Now, I'm wondering whoever's voted, whether or not that would actually affect the stock market at the end of the week in some ways.
Whoever wins, will the stock market tick up or down?
Yes.
Well, the conventional wisdom, if you believe
conventional wisdom,
the folks on
CNN.
TV, is that
who doesn't?
Obama's winning because of his economic message.
Okay.
So I suppose you would see a tick up
because wasn't that one
for
of
Obama more than McCain? But honestly, the market usually reacts more positively to Republicans. So I kind of feel like you might just have a sense of relief that the freaking election is over. It might not be a huge reaction because there are so many other factors. They might just go up no matter who wins.
Right.
Hmm. What is all these colors?
Well, we're watching, you can't see on the audio podcast, is we're watching CNN with the sound off, and John King is at his big map. The red
He's
states,
changing the votes
obviously
with his
the hand. Democratic states, the blue states, the Republican states. The light colors mean they're leaning, they're not solidly in the camp. The yellow states are undecided.
So wait, California's a blue state? Oh, that's right. California
is a Democratic state.
I'm sorry. I thought it was the opposite.
See, now it used to be.
Yeah.
It used to be. Right. It confused me because the Democrats are communists and the Republicans are blue bloods. Yes. That's how I used to remember it. And then they flipped it.
I don't know. Every time I hear a grand old party, I think of blue.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah. I don't know. Me too.
It's confused. But a lot of ballot initiatives. I actually went to Ballot Wiki or
Ballotpedia.
Was very helpful.
Yeah. It's extremely helpful.
Because I like the fact that it kind of cuts away a lot of messaging that goes around the proposition, and it just kind of gives you, okay, this is what it is.
Bullet points. Yeah.
This is what it's going to cost, and this is what it's supposed to do.
And this is who says what about it.
That's exactly.
So you can see, like, okay, the Sierra Society is for it. The loggers are against it. I get it.
I go with the loggers.
I get what this is about. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. I mean, whatever way you're going to go, it's what's.
And you already voted, right? Because you did the absentee ballot.
I did. Yes, I voted weeks ago. Now.
I will do it on the day across the street, actually 3 blocks away.
Josh?
I was going to vote early at City Hall, but sickness prevented me, so yeah, I'll be voting on the day of.
You know, they were saying earlier today on TV that if it rains, it favors the Republicans.
Why?
Because just statistically, turnout for Democrats drops 2.5%. When it rains, turnouts for Republicans drops 1% when it rains.
This is my take on that, and that traditionally Democrat, one of the larger support bases for the Democratic Party have come from lower income families. So I think with rain, not all of them have access to an automobile or some way of getting
easy
transportation to the polling station.
Also, younger voters tend to vote Democrat, they tend to not
melt in the rain,
want to bother going to the polls. Whereas when it rains, and they were saying that older voters will go out in the rain.
Wait. So
and
you
they
say,
tend to be more.
Are you saying that younger voters can be in some ways apathetic if the weather turns, and they will?
Yes, I am. Statistically speaking, yes.
Yeah. Who am I to argue with statistics?
I am also saying that anyone under 30 who is not a socialist has no heart, and anyone over 40 who is not a conservative has no brain.
Okay, Churchill. Has there been statistics on how much...
I'm not saying that Churchill said that.
Whatever.
How many... early votes have been cast, or has that not been collected yet?
What was the number I heard them throwing around? Like 25 million?
Wow.
So it's been a huge number of early votes.
Yeah, because I know the Democratic Party, or I don't know if both parties are, but I know the Democratic
Party
are definitely pushing for people to do
now,
early
what was
voting.
The... there were some issues regarding early voting, like there weren't enough ballots or something?
They've been talking about long lines because they, you know, they weren't expecting the amount of turnout.
And are these a majority still of the paper ballot variety?
I don't know. I don't know if the majority are. I know mine was, because early voting in California, they mail you a paper ballot. You connect a box with a black pen, black ink pen, and that's your vote. But I don't know.
I'm just wondering, remember everyone was talking about... Everyone was talking about the electronic voting station, so I'm just wondering, percentage-wise, how many of those...
There was one early voting station that had electronic voting, because when it opened up, people were complaining that up and you thought you were pressing Barack Obama, it would select John McCain.
And that's not good.
And registrar, the secretary who in charge of that in that state, was a Republican, and he came out and he's like, yes, this is confusing. It's not on purpose. It's the way the screen is calibrated, and we're adjusting it to try to make it easier. But the problem is, and I noticed this when I went to buy movie tickets this weekend, the screens are calibrated for straight-on viewing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're taller than that thing and you look down, it changes the angle, and you think you're touching one thing and you're touching something else. So you have to kind of squat down and look at it straight on to get it right. And I bet that's what was going on there.
Or get rid of
tall
people.
Which was calibrated perfectly fine, but when people were looking at it at a certain angle, maybe too short, maybe too tall, I don't know, it was giving you that impression that I'm pressing something when you're not.
Hmm. Speaking of voting irregulars, keep saying this acorn thing.
Oh, right. The acorn vote. Yeah, that's something we're not getting any straight information from anyone.
This is the information I've gotten or I've read so far.
Uh-huh.
And this only pertains to to Nevada, like they were a couple of or maybe several Acorn employee, or I guess they're employees or employed by representatives, were actually actively trying to get voter registration for people who weren't from the state, like were out of state. And I think a couple of them were sports team members, which is really odd. But I can't really get any real solid information. So I'm just wondering if any of you have any more
inside scoops.
Yeah.
I don't have any inside scoops. I mean, my understanding of it isn't that much different than yours, which is it's a voter registration agency. They've been funded by mostly Democrats, but sometimes Republicans, that they go out and they...
Well, Acorn is actually a low-income housing advocate.
Right. They particularly target low-income voters, try to get them registered to vote. It's a get-out-the-vote initiative.
Yes.
And... they are in trouble because some of their registrars have been going out and in order to get paid by Acorn, handing in fraudulent registrations, registrations that say Mickey Mouse or registrations of people who are dead. And the allegations are now flying that this election could be fixed. If this election can be fixed by fraudulent voter registration, then the voter registration system in your state is broken.
Yes.
Because what has been happening in most of these cases is the registrar gets the registrations, it verifies them. Acorn actually gives them in three different piles. These are, we're honest to God certain, are valid. These have questions, and these, we're honest to God certain, aren't valid.
Mm-hmm.
But they are required to, by law, in almost all states, to hand in every registration filled out. Because you don't want an agency going, oh, I don't want this person's registration. I'm going to pretend that it's not valid and throw it away. Yep. You don't want the registrars making that decision. Every form filled out has to be turned in. And that's where it's getting dicey. Because now people are accusing Acorn of trying to perpetuate fraud. I doubt that they are trying to perpetuate fraud. However, it's not impossible that they are. And if they are, the state laws need to be changed so that there is better oversight of these registrations' validity and that there is better oversight of someone showing up at the polls and identifying themselves. In some states, including California, you walk up, you say who you are and what your address is, and that's all you need to go vote. Yeah. You don't need to show any kind of other proof that you are who you say you are. So in those cases, Acorn could perpetuate fraud. They could go in and register dead people and then tell their buddies, hey, go to this polling place and say you're Dolores Goodwin, and they'll let you vote because you don't have to prove that you are.
Yeah, I don't know. I've always found that a little kind of a big, not a loophole, but kind of dangerous, I think.
Well, and the reason they say it's okay is because the registration agency itself in the state is charged with validating every one of those registrations.
Well, they mark you off.
Acorn is not charged. Any kind of registrar is not charged with validating those registrations. The estate agency that accepts the registrations and issues the voting cards are validated. So if there is any corruption, it's in that agency that is validating those addresses and saying, yeah, this person's dead, but you know what? I'm going to turn a blind eye. Let that through.
What if you registered up a bunch of invalids and then...
and then go vote on their behalf. Yeah. I mean, that absolutely could happen.
I don't know. It's... I personally don't believe that there would be enough, that you could generate enough
fraudulent...
That's
generally why they're not too worried about it, because, first of all, you have to go to a priest. You have to go to a different precinct for each invalid.
Because if they see you showing up twice,
they're going to notice.
Right.
And they're going to say, wait a minute, didn't you already vote this morning?
Fake beards.
I was slimmer then.
That's my twin brother.
And what if you go as twins?
Yeah, seriously.
Multiple personalities can vote multiple times.
I think there should be. I would get to vote a lot.
That's not funny, Tom.
I think it is, but I don't. Should we read a comment or two? We're going to go over time today.
It's a long
because
day.
Because it's our election special.
Sure. Why not?
We've already called the election.
Yes. Well, you've called. Well,
but it was busy.
At least
we left a message.
The predictive markets
have called the election. Sean O'Hara says, I love the show, guys, but I've been disappointed with the last couple episodes. What? We talked about nuclear and solar power in conjunction with our dependence on foreign oil. This is a mistake I see people make all the time, and it drives me crazy. These are two separate, though tangentially linked, issues.
I agree.
Tangentially. According to the Department of Energy in 2006, only 1.6% of American electricity came from petroleum products. By contrast, renewable resources accounted for 2.4%. That's not even including hydroelectric. Yes, we get more power from wind and solar than oil. Conversely, just 2% of the petroleum consumed in the U.S. went into energy production. Even adding in residential and commercial use, which includes some electric generators, it's only 7%. If we could wave a magic wand and replace every oil-burning power plant in the U.S. with nuclear reactors, it'd have a tiny effect on our consumption of oil. The real issue is transportation, which accounts for 70% of our petroleum use and is distinct from the issue of electrical power. The only way to wean ourselves from OPEC's teat is to develop a viable alternative to the internal combustion engine.
Well, see, my point on that initially wasn't the fact that we were beholden to nuclear power as the answer for foreign oil. Mine was essentially to, for example, coal-based generation.
Coal, yeah.
Was essentially the positive of nuclear was maybe an alternative to replace those fossil fuel-based generation.
I think we did
plants.
Confuse, or at least yeah. maybe I confused those
I think
those
we
two
might
issues.
Have confused
so Sean's
those
got a really good yeah. point here, which is there's clean energy, and then there's foreign energy.
Yes.
And foreign oil, I think he rightly points out, is a small percentage.
Yeah.
And it's overblown. I mean, I that was our ultimate point, which is the effect of foreign oil is overblown in this election.
And also, I think more of that, other than transportation, is also, especially in certain parts of the country, for home heating.
And when you bring in transportation, what you hear a lot of folks talking about is we're moving towards electric cars. I mean, we really mm-hmm. are. Whether that's where we should move or not, that seems to be where we're moving. And a lot of that is moving to plug-in hybrids, where you have a hybrid, it can run on gas, but you plug it in and get electricity out of the grid to charge it up so that you don't have to use as much gas. And that's going to use the electricity that comes out of our grid.
Yes.
So it can use coal and it can use
Well,
oil.
Electricity, whatever your generation source.
Whatever the electricity is being generated, that's being used to power your car. Yes. And that's where some people worry.
Well, that's one of the arguments that the German environment, was it either environment, one of the parties, stipulated was that when they were looking into it, you were shifting away fossil fuels away from inside the vehicle, but you were shifting them over to the plants because coal still provides a majority of electricity used in Europe.
And that's why we think it needs to be clean coal.
Or an alternative source. I mean, clean coal is one of those.
Or if you're going to use coal, a lot of people say, well, we need to have it be clean coal because then if we power our cars with electricity, we don't want to have polluting coal. Rodrigo says, I haven't quit on the podcast yet, but since Tom complained about the few number of comments, I thought I should give you guys some love.
Quit?
Politics is always a heated topic on this podcast, but not my specialty. I guess it's because I'm a Brazilian and the corruption in our politics has always frustrated me. Living in Toronto right now also doesn't help much since I have no idea who Stephen Harper and Stephen Dion are.
Stephen Harper, he just won re-election, Conservative Party, which is funny because they dissolved the original Conservative Party and created a new one. But anyway, it's a long time.
One little thing I wanted to mention about what Tom said, selecting just smart people that don't campaign to pick our leaders. So if they are actually not campaigning, isn't that basically a popularity contest? That's one of the things I hate the most about Brazilian politics. Every 4 years during the local elections, famous stupid people will raise from the dead to run for an office. This year we had retired soccer players, ex-porn actresses, and a couple of singers from the 80s and 90s running. Yes, some of them got elected, while some really good candidates are left out for not being as popular. By the way, voting is obligatory in Brazil.
It's also obligatory in Australia.
On other news, by the time the next podcast comes out, the World Series will probably be over. And though I am not a big fan of baseball like Tom, I'm sure it ended on a high note for one sports team from a major American city, and their fans are still celebrating drinking beer. So cheers to them. I think ArgueCon should actually happen. Tom, Roger, and some listeners having a not-so-friendly barbecue in San Francisco next summer full of heated discussions, hate towards Fresno, and some smoky ribs.
What's wrong?
Hey, I'd even apply for a visa and buy plane tickets for that.
So why? Where does the hate for Fresno come from? Did you say something?
No, it's your Modesto-Fresno divide there.
You mean your connection that you keep making for some odd reason?
Well, because Modesto,
it's like a 4-hour, 3-hour drive apart.
Had the Class A team for the A's, and Fresno had the Triple A team for the Giants. So I figured there must be.
So their farm league's out in Fresno?
The French Connection.
Yeah, Triple A too.
For the Giants.
See, and now the Fresno hate starts to rise.
No, I'm just saying
surface.
It's such a huge distance away.
Jealous and don't try to pull it off. On
whatever,
this
whatever.
No, but you know what? I think Rodrigo's onto something. Maybe that's what ArguCon should be: is meet in a park, barbecue.
Just a park?
Then we don't have to rent any kind of hall.
Yeah, but if we do it in Golden Gate Park, we still have to rent out the field.
Well, then we do it over in the East Bay where you don't have to do that.
We should, fine.
We just say, hey, well, you know what? We're going to meet in the wall.
We should get donations. It'll be rent huge. One of those Bay Cruise lines where you get on. You get a couple of PAs.
Maybe we'll get
set up, yeah, set up some megaphones. And
the Zeppelin's $500 a person. It can fit 12. That's about how many people we'll get.
You know what? And then we could. The thing is,
whoever loses gets thrown off.
If I'm correct, there are no lavatory facilities.
There is a lavatory on the Zeppelin. Yes.
On that particular Zeppelin, because the one we went on.
Oh no! This one has a lavatory with a view.
Oh, so you get to see where your crap is flying out through the bottom.
Yeah,
lovely.
Well, if they dump while you're in there, I guess while you're dumping.
Oh my God!
Matthew has. I feel like we should read Matthew for some reason. There's a lot of great comments. This is what always happens. We ask for comments. We get 16. We don't read any of them. You guys get pissed and you don't make any more comments.
Read Matthew's.
One, two, or three. He has three different ones.
Which is the one you thought was best?
I don't know what the. I'm not.
Two.
Looking. Two. Okay. I heard an interesting program called The Great Divide. Subtitle: Is the American Dream Dead? It's saying that if you have the greatest income and wealth inequality in the industrialized world, where the top 1% of the wealthiest own more than the bottom 90%, or the top 1% takes home 20% of all the income, then the political world does not listen to the 90%, as they don't matter, as they don't have an economic voice. It notes a Supreme Court judge that is quoted as saying that you have a democracy or great wealth concentration. The other point raised is that statistically, the USA is a nation with one of the lowest class being economic status, from poor to working to middle class to upper class. So the American dream is not a reality for almost anyone that is poor. It notes the idea of citizen has been eroded to where people are now consumers, and so you don't have the rights and responsibilities of citizenship now, but are just consumers who buy things. The question is, for this and all future elections, is who will be able to bring back the USA where the American dream is a reality?
I don't know. I don't quite agree with that comment. One of the studies shown, and this was done a decade ago, so I'm not sure how relevant it is using statistics. One of the things they found is what generated most of the what you would consider economically poor were recent immigrants who came over and did not have a lot of money to start with. But over the generation, say, so by the time their kids came out of high school, that wealth gap that you saw closed because their kids were now upwardly mobile because the parents spent so much of that money invested into their children, because then their children would be able to obtain better jobs. And not saying that it's not true for people who live in a lower strata of society, but to say that all people of low income would not be able to are somehow locked out.
Well, I think there's two different things going on there. There's the majority of people who are poor.
Yes.
And then there's immigrant poor. And those are two different things. I mean, one is a subset of the other, essentially. And you're right. You can look over U.S. history, and first it was the Germans, and then it was the Irish, and then it was the Italians, and then it was the Asians, and now it's the Ethiopians and Africans and Indians that come over. They're considered to be poor people. They're seen as running small shops and small business, but eventually rise, move to the suburbs, integrate themselves within the greater populace, and are no longer seen as any kind of special segment of the population. That is happening for Asians right now, and it is in the offing for the more recent immigrants. It's already happened for Italians and Irish. I mean, people think like, oh yeah, but Italians and Irish are white. They weren't always. Well, Irish were not considered white in the United States in the 1800s.
You bring up a very interesting comment about like not considered until the middle of the 20th century. I mean, white only consisted of people from England, Scandinavian countries, and in some cases, not even the French were considered white.
Well, in the United States, you were English, or you were foreign.
Yeah,
and that's where you get the Pennsylvania Dutch, because they were Deutsch, they were German, and they were different. They were separate. They were maybe Hessians, and you didn't trust them. And then eventually that went away, and the Germans got grandfathered in. Then you had, the Irish, and they were different, and they were the Irish, and they were the heathen, and they were the barbarians who rebelled against the English.
The thing is, you still see those kind of separations in the East Coast, like in terms of
the remnants of that. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you still.
It's not like you have Irish being prejudiced against in jobs, and it's not like you don't see an Irishman move into your neighborhood and suddenly everybody's I've got to flee from the Irish invasion. But you do see things. I think what you're talking about is things like Southie in Boston and areas that are kind of historically.
Well, they still historically, but still are in many cases, as opposed as when people started migrating west. Those differences tended to disappear because, one, there were far fewer people. You had so much more land. So I think I personally believe when you're encompassed in a higher density of people, things like that, that kind of tribalism, where either ethnicity or in some cases even things like what street or what part of town you were born in start to emerge, because that's how you differentiate yourself from a million other people.
Well, that's why that explains a lot of people sometimes just don't understand sports. And really, that is that same instinct being driven when you have no other real way of directing it is to your sports team.
Yeah, you latch on. So I'm a Red Sox fan, or you're a Giants fan.
Red Sox Nation. I'm a member of this nation.
See, I can understand the Raider Nation, but the Red Sox Nation.
Yeah, yeah. Or the Raider Nation's another good example of it. So the whole idea of the American dream, I think, is very ephemeral. It was something that was sort of created as a propaganda.
It was the thing is that people think the thing is, looking back through history, when I was looking through it for a class I took in school, a lot of what was considered the American dream was posited by not so much the government, but by either people who had a business shipping people over. Or, for example, like when they wanted people to populate new territories, oftentimes a lot of companies used big banners and stuff. For example, L.A. Not a lot of people back in the turn of the 20th century. To get people to move out there and all, they gave out these lavish kind of press, I guess at that time would not press, but... ad pitches to people in the Midwest. They would call Dubuque by the coast. You know, they saw all these orange trees. There are really no orange
trees. Which would now be an insult.
there are no natural orange trees that grow out in California. So what they did was they take oranges and stuck them on Joshua trees, and they took photos. It's like, wow, you get all this wondrous blah, blah, blah. So I think that, as well as coupled with things by a lot of the... this sentimentality by a lot of recent immigrants helped generate that. I don't think it was one thing where...
It seemed like the 50s was where it really gained steam.
Right.
But again, that...
like, everybody can have... We've won the war, and everybody can have a house and a car.
But I still think a lot of that was generated by, like, GM, like, a lot of the companies who wanted to perpetuate that image so you would buy into
those
goods.
Which goes back to what Matthew was saying, is about a nation of consumers rather than a nation of citizens. I do not agree that we have become a nation of consumers. I think since the Industrial Revolution, since the end of feudalism, we have always been a nation of consumers.
I totally agree.
Since the creation of this nation. However, he's right about the erosion of citizenship.
Yes.
And I think that we want to blame. We want to say, well, people aren't citizens anymore because we've been turned into a nation of consumers. Or people don't have a sense of citizenship anymore because we aren't educated on citizenship. We aren't given these values. Or people don't feel like they're citizens anymore. They don't take pride anymore because the media is distracting us and we're watching celebrities and all this. But you know what? It's us.
Yes.
It's you, yourself, who has the responsibility to act like a citizen.
However, you libertarian of you.
Now, I admit there is a psychological propensity for certain people to be prone to be a citizen or not. Yeah. And that there are going to be people who it's easy for because they just have that natural feeling for it. But really, in the end, if you want to blame anyone for a sense of citizenship, Yeah, look in all the mirrors.
I only have two.
It takes a long time.
There's several million mirrors out there. It's going to take a while.
Now, like, one of the things I always thought interesting about Heinlein's Starship Troopers was that to become a citizen, if you were born into a country, say you were born in the United States, you weren't an automatic citizen. You could work, you could go to school, you could do all that, except you would have no voting rights and you could not hold office. The only way to gain citizenship was to do civic service, either in the military or in some sort of like national Peace Corps, where you had to work at least 5 years in it in order to gain citizenship, because the leaders at that time believed that the only way to instill that kind of pride, sense of responsibility, and the kind of the sense of ownership was to make people work for the
right.
Community.
And a lot of
large.
People feel that Heinlein verged on fascism with that theory. So, you know, I'm not sure that I go that far, but I know what you're saying.
I totally agree. But that's the thing, is a lot of these there's no clear separation. I don't think. I don't think you can honestly say that.
No, it's a continuum.
I want
to leave us with this thought. There's been a lot of accusations that Barack Obama is or is not a socialist. The fact of the matter is that the United States government is a democratic socialism of a sort.
Well,
we have Social Security. We have government funded agencies. We have a large bureaucracy. It is a mild socialism.
We in many cases started what would be considered modern socialism with the New Deal. I mean, so.
However, there is one candidate who is in fact socialist, and that's Brian Moore from the Socialist Party of the United States of America. Now, a lot of people also want to call John McCain a fascist because he's a Republican, and that's just easy to do. But he's not a fascist. He doesn't believe in the state over everything. In fact, he's the anti-fascist. He's one of the few people that objected to Guantanamo and to the sort of blind patriotism that has been foisted upon us. John McCain is not a fascist. However, presidential candidate John Taylor Bowles is
because
the National Socialist candidate in the United States of America. And so he is, in fact, a fascist.
Yes.
So there you go. Now, if you want to accuse a candidate of being socialist or fascist,
you know
you have a couple of rock-solid candidates.